Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Front Page Dub. I'm your host, Cody Ojeda, joined again by the, I guess I'll call you two a dynamic duo now, Matt Olson, Annabelle Banfield. I'm just here keeping the conversation going along, aren't I? Matt, we'll start with you first. How are you doing?
Quite good, Cody. I think the whole Unite Round festivities were probably quite good for those who experienced it. I know I sure as hell didn't. So, other than that, keen to obviously chat ahead of the international window coming up.
And it's good to have you here at the start of the episode too. Unlike last week, where unfortunately work and the Perth traffic, which is almost non-existent, got the better of you. Annabelle as well. Glad we haven't scared you off yet. How are you doing?
No, I'm good. I'm not scared off, as you said. And I did get to some of the, you know, Unite Round festivities alongside you, Cody. So that was pretty fun. And, yeah, looking forward to more A-League action and Matilda's action that's coming up pretty soon.
Yeah, for those that are unaware, me and Annabelle, well, Annabelle's been commentating for ages. I made my commentary debut. Weird flex, but okay. But yes, me and Annabelle were commentating some of those A-League women's games at Unite Round, which was a good experience. Shout out Collective for the opportunity for myself and Annabelle to be able to be a part of that and for trusting me to get behind a mic that I never have before, which, as I said, fantastic experience. Either way, let's get into it. We've got a jam-packed episode to get through. We've got a lot of stuff that's happened over the last fortnight. But to start us off, as always, we'll just go through the results of the last fortnight since we last recorded. Matt, Perth Girls, starting that kind of period, not in a good way. Brisbane Roar continuing a fine bit of form there in 3-0. Sydney Derby came around, Sydney FC, turning the tide around a little bit. We did go into them a little bit and kind of hammer into them a little bit, actually, in the last episode. But the ship looks slightly steadied. 1-0 win for them over Western Sydney Wanderers. Adelaide continuing a good start to the season for them as well, beating Canberra 2-0. Melbourne City, Central Coast Mariners 2-2 draw. Moving on to the Sunday that weekend, Newcastle Jets beating Wellington Phoenix 1-0. And Melbourne Victory getting a nice 4-1 win over Western United. And moving into Unite Round, Adelaide losing 1-0 to Wellington Phoenix, probably a shocking result for both teams. Brisbane Roar, their fine form gets even better, 4-0 over Western Sydney Wanderers. And then 4-1-all draws in a row. If anyone was looking forward to excitement in the A-League Women's in Unite Round, then I'm sure the league definitely apologises for what ended up coming about. I say that lightheartedly, of course. Those games were decent to watch. Mariners Victory 1-1, Jets Western 1-1, Canberra Perth 1-1, Sydney FC and Melbourne City 1-1. Annabelle, I'll start with you first. What stood out for you over the last fortnight?
Well, I think as you mentioned with the draws in Unite Round, like I think it just shows that on their day, any team in this league can have a great day and beat almost anyone. You know, like there are so many teams that you mentioned there that I would have gone, oh, they're looking really good. And they drew with a team that I wasn't really on my radar. And so it just goes to show you that all these teams have talent across the field. And if they're clicking on a certain day and maybe the other team isn't quite clicking on a certain day, you know, anyone can match it with anyone. And I think that's a really exciting thing about the A-League Women's.
Yeah, I'd hate to be a betting person following this league, especially those overseas ones. They get really angry when their bets don't come off. Matt, what about you? What stood out for you over the last fortnight?
I could really find some obscure takes in this. I actually think Wellington's results against Adelaide to kick off Unite Round is one that really captured me as sort of a sign of where that team can actually go in the right direction. You know, again, I think they're sitting in about 11th, if I'm correct. But I actually just sort of saw a lot of the promise that someone like, you know, Olivia Ferguson, Alyssa Wynum, you know, a lot of these players that I think we kind of trusted to be pretty good, really stepped up and showed that there's actually some sort of promise and talent there. And as to Annabelle's point, I think just the unpredictable nature of the league and the fact that it is really tight-knit. You know, when a team like Wellington kind of has a day where they play pretty well and play up to a high standard, you have to ask more questions about, you know, what are other teams hiding and what else is going on around the league. And I think all 12 teams, to their credit, have shown an upside so far. And that was one that, yeah, really, really caught my eye.
You say all 12
teams. Well, I think
teams.
We only talked a couple of weeks ago about how good Adelaide were looking. And, you know, things can turn in an instant, right? For better or for worse, unfortunately. The other thing that sticks out for me there is that, Auckland's going to bring in their team in, I think it's next year. They're
Yeah,
bringing in
next year.
their A-League women's squad. And so Wellington's kind of got to fight hard to keep their players. Do you know what I mean? Like, Auckland's the biggest city in New Zealand. It's probably where a lot of those girls are from. And so if they start, having some good results, then maybe people will be more likely to stick with Wellington over, hitting the new club, which adds a bit of rivalry, makes it a bit more exciting.
And if it's anything like the men's side that's come in this year, they're definitely going to be making a play for the best New Zealand talent that will be available for them, even if it is maybe outside the A-League women's, as they did with the A-League men's. And nice unknown talent that they've been able to tap into, and they're off to a fantastic start themselves. Matt, I want to track back to something you said. All 12 teams have shown something about themselves this season to show why they can be good. With all due respect, would you say that about the Wanderers as well?
Yeah, look, I think the Wanderers are obviously off to a slow start, but I would still say there's enough of a team there that, again, they'll definitely be able to pull off the occasional shock result. I don't really know how to explain the Brisbane loss that occurred, and I don't really know how to explain why. What worked at periods last season for them, especially going forward, isn't necessarily translating. I mean, to go back to the Derby result as well, I mean, there was just nothing that really presented itself in a meaningful way for the whole 90 minutes. And yeah, look, I still think that you have a team that will show up and will be pretty good. And I think that was more the point that I was making, is that every team have that spark in them. So just because the Wanderers haven't exhibited, shown that, doesn't mean we should necessarily be skeptical and get the pitchforks out. Because to be honest, like, they're one team where I would have happily done that in the past. But I think applying a bit more of a nuanced kind of edge is important, because I know that they're the one team, and the Jets are a bit like this, Mariners as well. It's very easy to doubt them because of where they've come from and how they come across. And you just know that the second we doubt the Wanderers, you know exactly what's going to happen. So, yeah, I'll take your point, but I'm also just like, I'm still going to keep some faith there.
I almost forgot in the early days of this podcast, you used to that'd be 5 minute tangents of you just laying into that football club. And not just the team, like everything around it in terms of how they ran their women's program. You never held back. So it's funny, I'm Sydney questioning, oh, have they shown enough this season? You're the one swinging in their defense. Funnily enough, you mentioned the derby. That was probably the game I was most impressed with them. I thought there was probably 20 minutes in that game where they actually looked like they were going to go and get a result that started the second half. But alas, it wasn't to be for them that day. Annabelle, what were you saying, sorry?
I was just going to say that I think it's tough for the Wanderers because, they rely on a lot of really quite young players. The obvious is Talia Eunice in the midfield, who actually got the player of the match in the derby from the Channel 10 side of things. And she is still 16, like very newly 16. You've got Amy Chisari also in midfield, who's, a teenager. You've got Elby Cannon in the back line. Sienna Sivescu, who we interviewed recently, still a teenager. Like, lots of teenagers all over the field, whereas other clubs might rely on one or two here or there, and the core is like quite experienced, mature players. And not to say that these girls won't develop into mature players, but it's hard to have that, as a teenager coming into this sort of league.
Few institute girls in there as well, which look, they've got an eye for the future. Whether it's an eye for now or not, that's a different story. And I think if there's one thing that we know about Wanderers fans, they do tend to want success almost now. And so that's a feature I've kind of discovered about that club, I guess, over the last couple of years, which every fan base has their characteristics, all power to them. But I guess sometimes these things do take time. And I promise that was not a dig at the Wanderers as well. I was just taking the piss a little bit there. I do think there is something about them too, but considering where they are on the ladder, they will need to get a finger out sooner rather than later. And I'm sure they'll agree with that as well. Before we actually go into that derby a little bit, I do want to, if I was going to say something for myself, I'm going to take it back a week before Unite round. Melbourne Victory beating Western United 4-1. I know Melbourne Victory, there was a second win of the season. They had that win over Adelaide early in the season, but that was a good game by Adelaide. Melbourne Victory maybe pushing their way through that one. They definitely had to battle for it, but this is a game where we probably saw the best of Melbourne Victory. blowing another quality side out of the park, and someone like Emily Gilnick stepping up in a big way deserves its own little bit of recognition. We'll move on to the derby now, where we spoke a lot, probably more from the Sydney FC side of things leading into this derby and the way they started the season, considering a lot of the change that had kind of come around the club. A lot of key players, a lot of good players leaving, some players coming in that you're not sure how they're going to fill the boots of those that came before them. This was probably the one game that they were looking at going, okay, if this doesn't go that way, what's going to go their way this season? A loss to your biggest rivals, or even a draw to your biggest rivals who haven't beaten you in God knows how long, would certainly raise some alarm bells. And as you said last week, Annabelle may even put an eye on Ante Juric a little bit.
Look, I think that that's off his back now. I will say, though, I was more impressed by their result this last week where they drew with City. I think they scraped a win against, you know, the Wanderers. You know, it came super late, that goal. And for large chunks of the game, the Wanderers looked better, or at least matching it with Sydney FC. There were portions of the game where the Wanderers held the ball a bit better, perhaps. But overall, the game was quite scrappy against the Wanderers. They were really fighting hard for the win, which shows a good amount of kind of tenacity and a good club culture that Sydney FC still have, you know. Fighting for that win when in circumstances where in previous years they might not have had to fight as hard for a win against the Wanderers, but they might have turned a corner because that game against City recently, where they scored first, you know, Mackenzie Hawksby looked like she was ready to, you know, run through a big brick wall for the crest on her jersey, and they just looked really good last week. So I take it back. And I will say that I think that Sydney FC, whilst they've started slow, I no longer have such alarm bells ringing through my head.
Well, if I'm looking actually to their next game, they play West United the next time they do take the field, not this weekend, the one after. We do have the split round coming up. So a bit of time to, I guess, really regather things, and they've got another quality game coming up. Although Western United, maybe not so much the start they wanted. Actually, just 1 point ahead of Sydney FC, so both sides will want to win out of that game. But, Annabelle, I'll keep this with you because we were watching that, well, we were commentating on that Sydney City game together, and Sydney looked, I won't say by far and away the better side, but they definitely did have the ascendancy for a lot more of that match than what City were able to get. You look at what they produced the week before in the derby against the Wanderers, it was a bit of a scrappy affair. Like you said, Wanderers were probably looking like the better team at times. 86-minute winner from Kaylee Tallon-Henniker. The difference in that match ultimately. But despite that being, you know, not the best performance, not a pretty performance by any means, but to be able to grind a result out of that and then be able to produce what they did next week, how important is that result probably going to be contextually in terms of the rest of their season, or at least in the short term? Because you don't get a point out of that game. They probably don't go into that City game with a lot of confidence. How much confidence do you think this result actually gave them to be able to move forward and show what they did against the league leaders or former league leaders?
This last fortnight has been really huge for the club because, like you said, the quality of the result against the Wanderers might not have been there, but just to get some points on the board to prove to yourself and the new players in the club that you can be a team and grind out a win together is really huge. And then this last week against Melbourne City, they had more of that quality in the side. They held onto the ball a lot better. They were able to move the ball quite freely at times, going forward with a bit more, meaning behind some of their attacking drives. And they were able to get some more shots off in a way that they weren't against the Wanderers and in previous weeks of the season. So I think it's starting to click for Sydney. Like you said, they lost some key players. It was always going to take a little bit of time to get things going, but you know, it's been slower than perhaps people expected because, you know, they're Sydney FC. They are always competing for the championship and they've been good the last few years. But I think it's the last performance, at least, you know what they say, you're only as good as your last performance. And the last one was actually pretty good against Melbourne City, I thought.
Yeah, definitely a massive improvement to what they've shown in recent weeks. Midfield probably still not 100% there. It'll be interesting to see how they go without a key figure that's come to be a key figure in that side, actually. Matt, we'll track back to Wanderers for a sec. I'm not sure how much you actually were able to get of this game, but you seem to be, I guess, not in agreement with what we thought about Wanderers' derby performance. I guess looking at that game individually, what did you see from the side?
Well, look, I think that that was more the emphasis was on Sydney to try and create and make something of that game. The Wanderers were just quite insipid going forward. Couldn't get the creation to a lot of chance creation is what I'm trying to say in the game. And where a side like Sydney will be clinical, even with all of the problems that they're having, especially in transition in the midfield, there seems to have just been a lost kind of influence. And I think we might be able to kind of identify where in the Wanderers team that maybe hasn't come from. But yeah, I mean to really look at the fortnight they've had as a whole and what they took away from that game, I feel like there's a work in progress and there's a lot of hard work for Robbie Hooker to do in terms of what he can expect. Just with the team to actually show some stability and show some fight. I don't know, outside of players like Seveska and Eunice, again, just Amy Harrison because of her leadership. I don't know if there is somewhere where you can kind of turn that into a well-defined strength and then you kind of build off that, or if there needs to be any more adjustment to the way the team's playing. But I still see a team there and a core there that is capable of winning. And I think that's the biggest thing is that, a side like Sydney, who's they've had a lot of issues with their structure going forward, but I think they're still pretty solid at the back. Brisbane, I'd like to say that there's just a lot of chaos and unknown that's making Brisbane so successful. The same successes that we've seen, bring, I think, Canberra up at the moment as an example. We saw the way Perth started last season. I think it's that element of unknown that can really wreak havoc on a team, and especially a team like the Wanderers, where they're having their own individual, struggles trying to figure out how they can make the system work. That's kind of how you end up with a result like the 4-0 loss that they had. So I just, again, I don't, I'm not looking at this team and going, they're awful, because I really just don't believe that. And that's all I'm trying to say. But their kind of output, if you look into the XG, I'm sure it's not very high. And that they have been conceding at a pretty free rate, to be honest. I'd have to check how many goals were conceded, but yeah, I'm pretty sure the average would be over two per game. So, it's not great at the moment, but there is a team there that really can go somewhere, and that's all I was trying to say.
I think I saw something today actually that Sam Kalma said prevented the most goals out of any keeper in the league so far this season. So there might be
But
something there.
the second that you bring up a stat like that about a keeper, it's because the players in front of them pretty
Yeah, of
average
course, of course.
and not
I'm not
performing
saying
well.
Sam Kalma is the best keeper in the competition or anything like that. I'm just saying there's been a job there for her to do at this stage, really.
For my mind, Sophie Harding, there's been so much pressure put on her in that side because of what she was able to do last year. They've tried to build the whole side around her, and she, so far at least, hasn't been able to replicate that kind of form. And I just think it's a team that's built around one player. And if that one player can't fire week in, week out, it's tough to try and kind of. I'm not sure they have backup plans.
I think that assessment is a little bit harsh. I think it's more like, how do you translate the current midfield that they have to be able to support her better than if to say that, there's a system there that's purely reliant on her. I don't know that it's totally accurate, but
Maybe reliant on one style of play that goes through her, and they haven't been able to connect through her then.
exactly. And
I'm
that's
not.
that's where going to find an alternative, finding out how you kind of get the team to kind of cook in a way is it's a tough job. But I doubt they're going to be playing at the rate they're playing, where they're barely getting, shots on goal, and they're conceding at the rate they're conceding. I mean, that does not really sustain itself. Teams find a way out of a rut, even if they're going to be pretty bad throughout the season. And I think we should also remind ourselves that we are only four games in. So if the argument can be applied to open up on the Wanderers, I mean, there's a lot of teams here that we could talk about where they'll be able to resolve whatever issues are going on. The unpredictable nature of the doubles, I mean, there is a lot of fluctuation, especially when teams are underperforming or overperforming. And I think that we are seeing that all across the board at the moment, because I would honestly go so far as to say it's quite a few teams at the top as well. And sorry, I know I'm moving on a bit, but there's quite a few teams at up the top as well. Where can they really continue to hold this? I'd be surprised.
We say it every year, to be fair, and it was Perth Girls last year that they came out of the box pretty quickly. They looked like they were going to be one of the leading sides of the competition, and then lo and behold, the way you move during the season, things don't work out. You may go on a run, 1-2 games, suddenly turns in 3-4 without a win, and next thing you know, you're going from first place to about ninth, which I'm sure you saw very clearly firsthand last season, Matt. I'll put it to both of you actually, because it's something I think both of you kind of alluded to, where there is, I guess, a lack of spark or a lack of quality around Sophie Harding. But does Holly Caspers coming back into the side when she's injury free make a difference?
Yes, I think it does, because she's got a lot more experience and a lot more, like I said, a little bit more experience and a little bit more maturity that the Wanderers are looking for. And she also has plenty of talent and you know, spark to go along with it. So it's a good mix. I think that the Wanderers right now have been missing a little bit in their midfield, especially with Amy Harrison dropping into the back line recently. They're missing that, you know, experience, you know, presence in the midfield to calm some of their players down. Like, I don't know the stats on it, but you watch some of their games and it feels like they're giving away a lot of fouls. It feels like they're giving the ball up cheaply, and perhaps a more experienced player could, you know, guide some of the younger ones through that. So yeah, I hope she makes a difference for them.
It's crazy with Holly Casper. She's only, I think, what, 25, but you look at her compared to the rest of the side, she's probably got at least 3 or 4 years on him as well.
But I also agree. I mean, you need a spark in the midfield, and I don't necessarily think that it needs to be physical characteristics as much as it is mental, right? That can really drag a team like the Wanderers pretty far forward. And you just saw when they kind of burst onto the scene, you know, with Serena Bolden way back when. I think a lot of that was a very mental game that was played at the right tempo. And you know, Cat Smith was coach at the time, and I just think that there's always an opportunity for a team like that, you know, to hold a better account of themselves. And I think compared to, honestly, in the time where we started this program, talking about a team like that, I just think that there's more diversity in terms of players being at an established rate, and those players and the younger players kind of being able to combine to make a team that just isn't anywhere near as insipid as some of those teams at the bottom used to be. I mean, the Jets and Wanderers were just, you know, you'd bag you 2 or 3 goals against them and call it a day. And I personally don't think we see that in the dub anywhere near as much as we did even 2 seasons ago, you know?
Yeah, I get what you mean. We'll move on. Some major headlines, or some headlines that have been circling around the dub recently. First off, the one that came out today, well, at the day of recording at least, it is the 27th of November that we have gotten together to do this. And it was today. Oh, it's a bit of sad news as well, of course. Hannah Lowry, unfortunately, on the cusp of what could possibly have been her Matildas debut, has unfortunately done her ACL in that game against Melbourne City in Unite Round. Now, Matt, she is a Perth native, someone that you spend a lot of time, I guess, following as she transitioned from this young player breaking into Perth, young Matilda, turning into this breakout star for the side. She just got a big move over Sydney FC. Matilda's call up, and next thing you know, everything kind of, I won't say crashing down because she's still a young player, got a lot of good years ahead of her, but definitely in the short term, a major setback. But for someone of her talent, someone that's been on the ascendancy that she has for the last few years, how rough is the timing of all of this?
Yeah, look, it is something that I've really struggled to grapple with, is the fact that this window where the size of the squad that Tom Samani was called up was really essentially to give, like, she's the key demographic for that exact reason, right? Like, you take A-League talent that is like exquisite, exquisite A-League talent, apply it into the international scenario, because we know that this window is geared towards playing weaker teams, you know, from the AFC, as much as it is going to be playing, you know, a big ticket item fixture against a Germany or a Sweden, right? So that the whole methodology like that was made for her. And I think the fact that these circumstances have been what's kind of knocked her out of that picture is really, again, it's just tough. But to understand really her career and the impact that it's had on football in WA is a statement that I think people just don't understand, that like you would consider Australia a hotbed for women's football and a lot of young talent, but in WA because of our isolation and because of the way that the academy system was set up and the governance of Football West, that like the selection for a lot of these players over time had to be really calculated. And you know, the scouting network that came out of a result of, you know, providing the platform for a young Sam Kerr who wanted to kick an AFL ball around, you know, to moving her to playing for Western Knights, Alistair Edwards picking her out for those you know, Hyundai academies that they had set up at the time. I mean, that system, you know, really, it was more fortuitous the way it all came about that we ended up producing, you know, one of the best players in the world. And if you speak to anyone who's been in the game here, when Hannah was like 13 or 14, people just knew like this is a really, really special player that we've got in our hands. She has a very unique athletic build. You know, her ability to be, you know, a little bit deceivingly fast, even for someone who's like unusually tall. She's not always there to have that kind of poacher role, and she's nor is she going to be like the sturdy centre back either. She's just a very, very unique specimen in the way that she goes about life as an athlete and the asset that she brings on the football field. And I say all of this to point to, you know, when she had firmly broken out under Alex Hipparchus, there was a game where one of the other senior journos, Ben Smith, was out. I think he was going to like a Coldplay concert or something, and I was the only journo that was there to cover the game between Perth Glory and Melbourne Victory. And I spoke to Jeff Hopkins and Alex Hipparchus that night, and the one thing that they told me, you know, was just that the asset that she has and what she brings to the team, where you know there's a lot of like younger talent, and I think a lot of in the way that they were playing, there was a lot of kind of playing in that midfield area, really using that number six role that she was kind of playing at the time, maybe even a bit deeper. And that just distribution that she had would be how Perth Glory would set up and really assert their dominance in a game like this. And Alex said very specifically, I was going to try and get to listen to the direct quote before we went on the podcast, but I didn't get up to it. But it would have been something along the lines of like her ceiling. Her ceiling is yay high, and she just has to keep setting that bar higher and higher. And she'll be, if she wants to make that move to Europe, she'll be able to do it. If she wants to get into the Matildas, she'll be able to do it. She just possesses that much natural talent. And looking at that now, and looking at the fact that this was that opening for her to finally make that move, it's very, very, very hard to take. And it feels personal because literally so many Glory fans have seen her grow up. And she would have been the most prolific in terms of career achievements, in terms of just like her role as like the face of girls football in WA. She would have been the most prolific Matilda, Western Australian Matilda since Sam Kerr. It's just a fact. It's a fact. I know we produce a lot of good talent in a state like WA, but Hannah Lowry would have been right up there. Even if she had only been capped, you know, two or three times, that's the impact that we're talking about that a player like that has on the game. And you know that because she's, you know, she was a 19, 20-year-old who was being used as like the face of the club for promotional material. And she was going on radio and she was in Zambrero ads and doing all this fun, weird stuff. And she's very introverted as well. Reminds me of like Aaron Moy and Tom Rogic and those guys who they used to be these absolute battlers. They played in the Premier League, the Champions League, but they were really, really shy and they didn't need to say a lot, but you knew everything about them and you knew the character that they possessed and the impact they had. So in all of that ramble, what I'm getting at is that like we've been denied just an incredible chance to witness a really, really special moment in the history of Western Australian girls football and the Matildas. And this hurts beyond. I've never been this sad at a player's injury ever, and I don't think I ever will be again.
That's beautifully put, Matt. I love the Aaron Moy comparison as well, because you talk about the similarities with their personality. I think there's almost a few similarities with, I guess, the style of play as well. They're that six, but maybe it's probably the way they play is more like a deep lying eight per se. So that's me trying to talk tactically, which doesn't usually go very well. So I'm probably going to stop right there. But Annabelle, I'll throw it to you because there's an opportunity here for Sydney FC, and I think one thing that we've both kind of agreed on is the way they've set up their midfield has been a little bit dubious, in the sense of you've almost had, we're talking about Hannah Lowry probably being that more of a eight style player rather than a natural six, even though, Matt, I think you did kind of describe her as such before. But They've got the chance now where you've got Caspers and Hawksby, who are probably going to be your eights and tens, and you've actually got the opportunity for Shea Holman to come in and really stake a claim. I know she's had times in her career where she's actually been the starting six, and the departure of Taylor Rea as well probably had, I don't know if the club really had a lot of forward thinking in terms of replacing her and I guess her style of play in Sydney FC's team. But this chance for Shea Holman to really come in and stake a claim to be the number six at Sydney FC outright, how big is that for her? As much as it's not, as much as it is still an unfortunate situation for the club all around.
Yeah, I think it's a good sign for Sydney FC that they've got someone of Shea Holman's talent ready to come off the bench and into a starting role. It's obviously awful that Hannah Lowry did her ACL. Like, you never wish that upon anyone, but in football, unfortunately, those things happen and you kind of have to be ready for the next person up at times, which, you know, it's awful to say out loud, but that's kind of how these things are all. Sometimes injuries are bound to happen and people need to be ready to go. I do agree that it will change their play style a bit because Caspers, Hawksby, Lowry, that trio is, you know, a very attacking focus that Sydney have been going with. That's clearly part of the playing style. And Caspers and Dos Santos at times have been swapping in and out of the wing role with each other, which I quite like because I think they're both strong on the wing and can, you know, be strong in the midfield too. I really like Shea Holman. I think she's a really strong player. I think she balances the team out nicely because she has that slightly more defensive focus. She's a really strong tackler. So I don't think that it will, you know, change too much for Sydney FC. That being said, Hannah Lowry is a player of such talent that there'll be a difference because she's expected to do a bit of everything in that midfield because there's no defensive player right now. She's kind of the glue that holds everything together. So it's a role, big role for Shea Holman, but I do think she's up to it. She's been in the Sydney FC squad for years now, despite still being quite young. So, you know, it's hard because it's a shame for Hannah Lowry and it is a shame overall for Sydney FC, but, you know, there's an opportunity here for Shea Holman to perhaps, you know, move into the starting lineup and prove that she's quality enough to, you know, command a starting spot in a strong A-League women's club. So yeah, I don't like talking about stuff like this because it feels like you're taking advantage of someone's injury, but
Look,
I
I
don't
think
know.
it's the way you'd probably put it is it's decent forward thinking by Sydney FC in terms of an individual player's development, where Shea Holman's been at the squad
Yeah.
for quite a while now. They developed her into a player who was able to come into the starting lineup on many occasions last year. As much as she may not have been the first choice to go into that midfield trio this season, you've still got a capable player there on the bench that can come in and show themselves as well. Because Shea Holman, do you look at the way, I guess, Matilda's coaches are now approaching selection? You give Shea Holman a good 8 months of football, there's no reason why she can't be in this conversation as well. So I think it's
Yeah.
an interesting opportunity for her. It sucks the way she gets it, but you know, from an individual point of view, Shea Holman's not going to turn around and go, "I feel bad for Hannah. I'm going to play like shit, and we're all going to miss her."
And
She's got to take the chance herself.
yeah. And even before she was in the Sydney FC squad, she's been in Football New South Wales Institute squad since she was super young. Her brothers have obviously been in and around professional football for years. Like, she is mentally strong enough to be able to step into this role and make it her own, I think. So it's a good opportunity for her.
Yeah, it's a good football family, that one. Oh, that one. Corey and Jake both doing bits themselves. We'll move on to, you mentioned the Matildas at the top of the podcast. Their squad got announced just after, well, no, just before we released this episode, just after we recorded it. So unfortunately, our debate about who may be getting a look into the Matildas squad was made redundant by the time that episode went to air. And I do apologize for that. Unfortunately, these things happen, and I did take a bit of time to edit it. But a host of A-League talent has been called up. Unfortunately, Hannah Lowry was one of them, but due to that unfortunate injury, she won't be taking part in this camp. But there is still, and I haven't even had the time to count it, so I'm just going to say there's a lot of A-League players that have been called up. Matilda McNamara, Tamika Yallop, who is a regular feature of the squad, Sian Fry, Michelle Heyman, another regular, Jess Nash, Isabel Gomez, Briley Henry, Carly Rosbacken, Leah Davidson, Alex Chidiac makes her return to the squad. Emily Gilnick back in the fold as well. Natasha Pryor, Chloe Lincoln, and Chloe Legazzo reclaims her spot in the Matildas. A few names that we discussed there. Annabelle, I believe it was you that actually brought up Briley Henry on the last podcast, wasn't it?
It was. Look at me getting a prediction right. I just think it's nice for players that perhaps got a call up like really early and you know, perhaps a bit too early in their career. They weren't quite ready for it. Like I Briley Henry and Jess Nash both come to mind when I say that because they got called up when Jess Nash was 17 when she made her Matildas debut, which is insanely young, especially for a centre back. Like that's a position where a lot of responsibility is on you. You can't just, you know, to have do a little bit of attacking flair and then off you go. You need to be a really strong, mature player to be a centre back for your national team. And Briley Henry as well was really young. And so for them to get back into the squad, even if for me, even if they don't make game time, for just being involved in that squad and being involved in that sort of atmosphere again, I think is really good for Australian football that we're bringing young players in into those environments again. Because I worry sometimes that, you know, the squad is, they're all still incredibly talented, but the squad is getting older and we're not bringing anyone new and younger in at the same rate necessarily. Like Ellie Carpenter and Mary Fowler have been the youngest in that squad for years now, and we're not bringing anyone younger in necessarily. So I like that there's a bit more forward thinking in this sort of larger squad.
That I remember being at, I think Annabelle, you said you were at Jessica Nash's debut as well, that game against the USA
Yeah.
at Accor Stadium. I
They
remember
put
being
her
there.
and Nevin in the centre back line to,
And that
as centre
was
backs together. And it was setting up to fail. Like they weren't ready for that yet. Like it was against the US too. Like that was mean.
that was the point I was actually going to make, because you've got Jess Nash, who this is a 17-year-old debutant, only had, I think, one season of A-League football as well up until that point. Partnered with Courtney Nevin, who had a little bit more experience under her belt, but then you're playing her
But
out of
she's still
position as
not a
well.
centre back.
Exactly. But you look at the rise that Jess Nash has been on since then. Had that year at Sydney FC where it was a little bit difficult. Melbourne Victory slowly started becoming this first team player, albeit in a new position as well. Gone to the Mariners, continued that rise going up. Even Briley Henry as well, where, after that year at the Wanderers, she made a Matildas debut. Had another year at the Wanderers, which was a little bit difficult on the scoring front. Went to Melbourne City. As much as she's maybe struggled for regular game time, has seen a transition to a new position as well as a fullback. Kind of reinvented
Yeah.
herself, still struggling to get in that lineup as well ahead of Alexia Apostolakis at the minute. But both
I like
arises
her
at the
versatility. I really like that she can do a bit of everything and whatever's needed, especially when the Matildas sometimes play in different formations and things. Briley Henry is someone whose skill set might be useful. You know, obviously she still, at least at this point in time, comes below in the pecking order behind the likes of, you know, Carpenter and Catley and Grant, but that skill set is clearly what they're trying to bring into the squad, where it's a wing back that does have that, you know, driving forward mindset.
Yeah, and for someone like Simani as well, where they're not there to be long term. They're not there to implement their own tactical style or anything like that. It is purely about just getting these players ready for international football, and I guess moving into a new era, whoever that does end up taking that role at the end of the day. It's an interesting choice, considering they may like she's still struggling to get minutes in her own club land as well. But look, a good one all the same, and it speaks to, as you mentioned before, the fact that they were probably brought in a little bit earlier than what they maybe were ready for. Both those players have been on their own journeys and now come into the Matilda squad again. Was it maybe 2, 3, even no, 3 years later, as almost completely different players, which is, I guess, what you want to see on a young player taking that journey in football. Matt, I'll throw to you for some of these other ones. Another one that I actually want to kind of point out, Natasha Pryor. A few, I'm not sure if it was a few, but there was a serious concussion injury that actually made her step away from the game altogether. Ended up coming back at NPL, had some good time, some good experience at RPR. Was a key part of Newcastle Jets last season when they did go on that run to finals, back in the A-League again this season, and now in the Matilda squad for the first time. What have you made of that?
Again, just like you know, it's probably on the opposite end of the spectrum of someone like a Briley Henry or Jess Nash, where we talk about sort of the fact that these girls are like a younger talent. This is just like the random, prodigy from well, not the prodigy, but just like the random kind of. I'm struggling to find the word, but just like, the person that isn't really gonna be here as a mainstay, but will get their few caps in an international environment, and you'll just be really glad to have kind of experienced that whole kind of story from start to finish. Tash Pryor wasn't even born in Australia. I think she was brought here by her parents at a relatively young age. She kind of was raised as someone that is English, being a big football fan, naturally grew up with the game, ended up kind of emerging into a Jets team that, again, I think they were very much going through that kind of period of they exist almost because they have to. There's not really any exciting edge to a Newcastle team. And of course, as someone that just has stayed in that team for the longest time. I mean, I know she, I think she had a stint in Canberra and things like that, but she has been a big part of the Jets' recent history for sure. And she's built to the point where, she is one of the more reliable and exciting players in the team. But around the time she had this really terrible accident with Savannah McCaskill, and it was in the time where, Fox had really poorly funded, their part to kind of broadcast the games, and the dub literally was just virtually non-existent outside of people who cared. And it was a time where, like, a player going through an injury like that, you just weren't sure, if they were ever really going to come back. And because of the lack of media interest and the lack of income that really comes into it, that happening to someone who's essentially a part-time athlete. You'd be like that goes so far beyond football. It's crazy. And this is what I mean. Like, her story, just the more you read about it, is pretty incredible. And someone that, I would be really, really excited to see have that little spell in the Matildas team, even as a flash in the pan moment. Because again, I don't think she's like one of the best footballers going around that we can produce, especially when, again, the ceiling is so much high for a lot of these younger girls in the team. And especially those that are cracking it in Europe as well, right? So I just think it is the kind of like feel good story you randomly see in a YouTube video, or that you read about when teams kind of go on these transitional periods and they have their unlikely heroes. And I think Tash Pryor really stands out as someone that in both the A-League's history and here now on the international stage, she's someone that again, I think it's a really encapsulating moment. I'd be really keen to see her get minutes, but I'm also very aware of the capacity of that. It probably has to be against Chinese Taipei as opposed to Brazil. Because again, when you look at a lot of the direct competition that she has in the squad, I mean, it's actually like a really, really defensively heavy squad. Obviously, a lot of the players that are pulled out, are more attacking minded or midfielders. That have had some of these injury concerns as well. So from that perspective, it's a bit of bad luck. But again, just for the personal element of it, I think a really, really sweet call up and a really exciting kind of thing. Just to the kind of thing you want to see play out. There you go.
Yeah, it was
Yeah,
that.
I like it. I also like that she's the kind of player that fits the mold of what the Matildas look for in centre backs, because obviously you look for a good strong defender, but the Matildas, especially in their set pieces, they like tall centre backs who can get up forward and score goals with their head, off a corner or off a free kick. And Tash Pryor has done that plenty of times in the A-League Women's, in the NPL this season. I saw her do it a few times for Apia. And so I think, yeah, the ceiling might not fully be there, but the style of play and the ability to step in and fill a void for a short period of time is something that I think she can do.
Yeah, it's speaking to one of the points you made, Matt, that clash with Savannah McCaskill, that was the one that actually, well, not forced her, or did force her for a small period, but what made her decide to step away from the game for a little bit, it was a little bit earlier than what I first thought, so I do apologise for that, and that is a little correction there. Before we move on, I'm going to put it to either of you, considering, I guess, the approach that's gone into this camp and squad selection, is there anyone that comes to either of your minds that maybe is a little bit unlucky to be missing out? If I had to pick someone, I'd probably be looking at someone like Alexia Apostolakis. Does that right back role really well, having a good start to life in Melbourne City, been very consistent for the Wanderers and does have that versatility as well. But is there any other names that come to you guys?
I think so something Annabelle said earlier about kind of the difference in age, I think where the Matildas suffer this most is actually like going forward. Because of kind of Caitlin Ford, Raso, Heyman, Gelnick, I mean, all of these women are 30 or older, right? I would have really liked to have seen someone other than Shaan Fryer, who possibly could even complement her in attack, because like the stocks get pretty grim pretty quickly, and I know that the Wanderers have been pretty bad, but really when you look at it, I mean, Sophie Harding is a name that comes to mind in that respect. I mean, maybe Holly Mack. I don't know. What there
Well,
probably
Holly
was a
Mack, I don't know if
window
she's ready
there.
yet to come back to playing as well.
But
You
like,
brought up Peter Trimas last fortnight as the obvious choice. Are you moving away from that?
I just, well, there's a gap there. Probably all the more reason why I'd be annoyed that Peter Trimas isn't included. But
Thought that was going to be the name you were going to throw straight away as
yeah, I
well.
thought you were going to bring it out like, I
Well,
wanted Peter Trimas.
yeah, I'd also kind of, I think the reason why I'm kind of caught in two minds is that I think it's as big a problem kind of in the midfield than it is in attack, really, as well. I mean, Chidiac's, she's not a spring chicken, really. Danielle Gallich is being called up. Someone like Izzy Gomez and Leah Davidson, they're almost certainly slated to make their debuts.
Hey,
So,
Alex, let's just track back to that. Alex Chidiak, she's younger than you.
yeah. That's unbelievable. That is actually insane to that is insane to think about. And I did not realize that. But also, look, in defense of that, which is it's not a very nice thing to realize out loud. Thanks, Cody. But like 24, 25 in women's football years is like it's the equivalent of kind of being in your 30s in most professional sport anyway, right? Like
I get what you're saying. Yeah.
a
It's
lot of
not,
these
you're not a
players have
rising
been,
star at 24, 25.
yeah,
You've sort
but
of
also
made your
a
mark
lot
or you
of,
haven't.
especially as far as the A-League women's competition is concerned, so many of these players were just getting minutes when they were like 14, 15, 16. So that really, again, I think that embodies what women's football has been about in this country for a long time. But I think when we talk about the issue of the gap that is presenting itself in age here, I think the fact that the A-League women has probably become of a higher standard has actually been to the detriment of the national team because, yes, we're seeing a lot of young talent. But think about the fact that you remember, Cody, when we were talking about Ivani Prakash, she kind of is an anomaly again. And I don't mean that in the sense that she's, a good footballer. I mean that in the sense that I feel like her bursting out into the scene and someone like Indiana DeSantos when she did with Sydney as well, it does actually feel like it's becoming like a rarer occurrence. Which means it's going to be a lot harder to produce another golden generation when, like, all of these girls, when you look at their careers, they were all balling out for their local teams when they were teenagers. And that's the lack of that in what's happened in the in-between period between the generation now and that generation that's, just played at a home World Cup, I think for me is actually probably the concerning thing. When we look at what is going to be a transitional period over the next 2, 3 years before the Brazil World Cup and obviously in the lead up to the Asian Cup as well. I don't know how you guys feel about that, but I think it's
I might go on a bit of a tangent here, but I'm optimistic. And the reason I'm optimistic is because we're starting to see A-League women's sides produce academies. And that's, what some of the overseas, and men's football's been doing for a million years and, European football's been doing is that they bring people through the whole club at the same time. So you're not jumping from state leagues to national leagues and this and that. The Wanderers are bringing in their A-League. Sorry, their NPL, academy for the first time next year in New South Wales. And I know Sydney FC currently has a training squad and there's plans to get an actual, academy together. I like the idea of that because you can see players, someone that's the head coach of the football club can go to training and see the under 14s training and say, no, bring her up to the 17s. And then a year later, oh, no, bring her up to the first grade squad. And you can sort of propelled players through that have this really high ceiling a bit quicker. Even if it's just to train on, you don't necessarily need them on the, academy, the deals and the scholarship deals and whatever the system is now. They can just be a part of your club since they were 10 years old, and you can have watched them and contributed to their development since then. So I think that might help things. I agree, there's right now you're getting less raw talent through at 15 years old, which is why Tahlia Yunus last year, when she debuted so young, was like, oh my goodness, wow. And previously all the Matildas debuted at that sort of age. But I think I like the idea of A-League clubs starting their own academies that play in the local NPL systems.
Yeah, I think the only thing we're probably missing that those clubs in England do have is the fact that those better clubs do get to play against each other on a bit of a consistent basis. But that is a long-standing issue that we have right across Australian football that I guess no one's really been able to work out. I actually remember last year at the Football New South Wales coaching conference, they had a guy from Scotland come over and I was having a chat with him, and he even said flat out the biggest issue that Australia faces is the fact that the country's so big, you can't actually get the best players playing against each other that often because it's just not feasible. It's not feasible, which I guess we've just got to kind of sit down and work with. But like you said, Annabelle, the fact that those clubs are actually starting to get those academies set up and sorted is probably 10 years too late, but look, it's better than now than never. Best time, as the saying goes, the best time to do it was way back when. Second best time to do it is now, and if it's going to be now, then hey, so be it. It's a step in the right direction, at least you'll take it. And just on Matt's point as well, if someone calls me not so much a spring chicken, but when I'm about to turn 26, they are catching hands, I can promise you. Yeah, I can see you laughing, Matt. I'm not joking. I want to move on. Just before I want to go on a deep dive with Brisbane, but just before we do, Unite Round. There's been a bit of contention, I guess, over the socials, if anyone's seen on social media over the last few days. Annabelle, you're very lucky that you're not on Twitter because it can be a bit chaotic and a mess sometimes. But we'll speak to soccer Twitter for about 5 minutes. Matt, I'll go to you first. The idea, I guess, of Unite Round, is this something that we keep? Is it something that we bin? Is it something that we rearrange? What do you think?
Look, I think from a women's football perspective, the conversation becomes like a lot harder as well, just because of I think the way that the APL have sort of set themselves up. I don't think their business model is conducive to be able to really put the A-League women on an even better platform than the one that they kind of initially set up for it. And Unite Round is a perfect example of like just by pure force, it has to be put on the back burner a little bit, and it makes a conversation like this again. It's actually really difficult to get through it. But my overall thoughts on the concept really boil down to the fact that in order to have that kind of festival atmosphere, and the kind of I guess just like the repetitiveness of the games, to be able to really make it conducive and make it commercial, it really needs to be like really, really ultra condensed into one area. And I think where the issue falls flat, especially from a women's football perspective, is that it really is going to have to be a standalone event if they want to do it right. And I just don't think there's the interest for that. But then that there also becomes the fact of like, if we end up going to a venue that's a bit more modest because you're not expecting as many people, what is the point in then actually having this whole congregation putting on this really big show if it's all within the confines of like, a stadium that seats a few thousand, a park that would be near it where they would have the festivities and everything like that. It just, to me, it doesn't actually sound like there's anything going on there that's of a lot of substance. And so I think, again, if you want the concept to actually grow into something that's special and iconic and meaningful to people, I just don't know that the A-League women, as a commercial, but also just as a business, I just don't think it actually has the means to be able to entertain the idea anymore. And the way that it was set up as a byproduct of the grand final deal, it just was never going to be something that really caught people's eye. But I think you speak to people who went. You speak to people who went to Kogarah, flew all over the country from Adelaide and Perth and Brisbane and wherever else, you know, other people that were devoted attendees of it came from. They will tell you they had the best time ever, and rightfully so, because that's what it's about. It's about bringing everyone together. But it's also not something that, you know, the APL and the A-League even actually really necessarily wanted to do. So like it's tough. It is something that I probably have more thoughts on actually extrapolating like the logistics of it and stuff, but maybe more in a men's football context, and maybe more in, you know, discussing like the demographics at play and the locations and things like that, which goes, I think, beyond the angle you'd want on this show anyway.
Annabelle, you've got anything you want to add?
I have an idea which I don't know if it'd necessarily work because, like Matt said, it might need to be a standalone women's Unite Round, men's Unite Round, whereas they want to keep it together so we're all, you know, united. But I think a regional Unite Round might work really well. And like you said, that might, you know, that they started it as a byproduct of the grand final deal and yada yada yada. So it might not impress all the right people. But I think from a fan's perspective, and from a locational perspective, you know, people in Sydney are pretty blessed. Like I like live in Sydney. We've got awesome events on all the time. And so and awesome sporting events on all the time. So Unite Round might not feel as special to us as it would to a country town or a regional location. And I think you'd still get obviously the same quality of football, and all the events and activations could be very similar, but you might get a bit more local buy-in if you put it in a place like Wollongong for the weekend, or you go to, I don't know, Newcastle or Coffs Harbour all weekend, or you go to a place that maybe doesn't have an A-League team because then they all want to get to the soccer for the one weekend that the National League's in town. Maybe you go to, I don't know, somewhere up, you go to the Sunshine Coast or you go to somewhere like that. I just think somewhere regional would feel a bit more appreciation for it and want to get behind it. And local businesses might become a part of it and they might have more activations and all that sort of stuff. It might get a bit more of a local flavor to it as well. Like I know Brisbane's obviously a massive city, but their Magic Round in the NRL, which is, you know, the was the first code in Australia to do the big everyone plays at the same ground all weekend thing. It's got a local flavour to it. You know, you go to the Caxton Street before the game and, you know, you hang out in Brisbane and it's got that kind of atmosphere, whereas Sydney doesn't really do that as much, at least. And so I think you send it to somewhere that can, you know, appreciate it a bit more and add their own sort of culture into things. I think that could make it really cool.
I don't mind that idea actually of it being, I guess, a regional event. I don't know why the first place that came to my head was Mudgee, get out to Glenwillow Sports Complex, something like that. But I get the idea where if, you know, we're talking about trying to, I guess, advertise it to state governments and stuff like that. But if you advertise it to a local council area, it might be, I guess, how do you say it? Maybe a little bit of a different approach in terms of, you know, suddenly they can actually reach out to local businesses, get something in, and you actually get. Well, one, it's a chance for people to see, I guess, a new part of Australia that they may not have seen before, but it would allow us to actually go somewhere and, you know, get a feel
Yeah,
for a
and the
new place.
local
And
soccer clubs, you know, want to be more part of it and send all their players into the
yeah.
stands and all that sort of stuff. It'd just feel a bit more like the festival they want it to feel. I think if it had that regional flavour, I think that could be something exciting to explore.
And there's one thing football in this country doesn't do well, actually tapping into those regional areas. It's something that I know the FA is trying to address in some way, shape, or form, but how they try and grow that interest in the regional areas. Maybe this is something that they can work with, I guess, the A-League in terms of, yeah, send your clubs out to a random regional city each year. We'll send, maybe even if they send the under-23s, and if someone's still got to buy around come those competitions, at least there's a fixture for them to play in there as well, have games if you're. Get it in one of the warmer months that the A-League actually plays in. You can maybe get games going from 11 to late at night. There's a way it could work, I guess. It'd be, I'm not closed off to that idea, I guess. That's what I'm trying to say. We will move on because I do want to have a conversation about this team, Brisbane Roar. Now, I don't know about you two. I was not big on this side going into this season at all. I didn't have much hope for them. I didn't think they were going to be bottom of the ladder and absolutely hopeless, but I was expecting probably lower mid-table. I don't want to say mediocrity because that's probably a little bit harsh, but it's usually what you the term you go with. And they're not noticeably good. They're not noticeably bad. They're kind of just there. That's what I was expecting from this Brisbane Roar side. But and Matt, you mentioned it off air that they did have a semi-good start to the season last year. They did win their first two games. Things fell apart pretty quickly, and there's every chance things could fall apart pretty quickly for them this season as well. But it's not just the result. It's not just the fact that they're starting this season winning games. They did have that first round loss to Canberra United, but it's the manner they're winning these games too. You're talking a 3-0 win over Perth, who haven't been a bad side this season by any means. A 4-0 win over Wanderers, who we spoke about extensively at the start of the podcast, but as much as they probably haven't hit the heights that people would want to see of them this season, that was still an anomaly of a bad result. But I think we've got to start asking questions about it. Are these results just poor performances on those other teams' end, or are Brisbane Roar actually looking like a team that I guess we should be taking notice of? Annabelle, I'll throw to you first. What have you made of their start to the season?
I think they've been really good. I think any team that can come out and win games, especially win games in such a convincing manner, it shows good promise for them and for their future in this season particularly. I think I like the way it's not just relying on youth or just relying on experience. It's a good mix across the board. You know, they've got the likes of Yallop, who's been around this league for ever. And then they've got the young players coming in, like the name that sticks out to me is Tish Woods, who's looked really good in the midfield for them. And she went to the Under-20s World Cup earlier in the year as well. So, she's a player who plays with more maturity than you'd expect for someone that young. I think they look really good. They're not fluking these wins. They're really going out and dominating against other teams, which, yeah, I'm impressed by.
Dishwood's always confusing me because her nickname's Tisha and her first name's actually Alicia. I don't know why that's always thrown me off. But yeah, someone that's actually really stood out, being a key performer for Brisbane Roar. Yallop in there, you got that experience. Momo Hayashi is another one that's really caught my eye. Coming from the NPL in Queensland at Gold Coast United, someone who hasn't actually played A-League women's football before and is trying to fill the boots of I hope I got her name right. I'm not going to bother pronouncing it. Filling the boots of Norrie, captain as well for a long time at Brisbane Roar, at least the last few years. Not exactly easy boots to fill, but she's been able to come into that kind of sixth defensive midfield role. Really good technical player, as a lot of the Japanese players that come out of that level of football in Australia are. And it's been a real key cog in this Brisbane Roar side and almost improves them as well, which has probably been the craziest thing of everything. I remember even the goalkeeper Sakani, when she first came into the league, she made the comment that she's here basically to win the competition. I was sitting there going, come on, this Brisbane Roar side's not going to win the league. And they're not doing too bad. I don't think you can...
They might, but they've got a claim at the minute.
Matt, I'll go to you because I know you've seen it firsthand how a side can have a really strong start to the season and things can, I guess, dip pretty quickly as well after one bad result or two. But do you see this happening to this Brisbane Roar side?
I think that Brisbane's midfield sets them up really well. I think that you have a group of players that's really going to be confident and fearless. But I guess it's only natural for me to think of the red flags because I don't really think of Brisbane as too big of a club, right? So I'm going to try and get the pros and the cons out in equal measure when talking about this. But I just think the biggest thing for me is, like, you know, it is common for, I did say this earlier, it is quite common for that sort of element of the unknown to really, really play a part in a team like Brisbane's success. I'm not going to take away from Woods, Yallop, you know, Sean Fry's been involved, Hayashi, because, you know, they're pretty decent players in their own right. They deserve to be at the level that they're at. And again, I think that they actually, their confidence and the more attacking blend of football that Alex Smith seems to pull off, he knows where their strengths are and he's utilising those strengths really well. But in the case of someone like Momo Hayashi, who again, hasn't actually been at the top level for a very long time, I would say her input would be similar to that of, and again, different. It's a different sort of position, so bear with me. But the impact that someone like Susan Fonsongkamp had when Perth were playing really well, right? That was just because it was a player you weren't expecting to be very exuberant. You had Alana Janchevsky and Sofia Tsikalos, who were kind of in that Perth setup at the time, and Fonsongkamp was a complete afterthought. So when she kind of broke in, she was in support of Grace Jarley, Hannah Lowry, and all these other girls. Her impact just meant a lot more and was a lot more useful. So I can't shake that when I look at the success of someone like Ayashi, where she could very well be found out. I don't want to take it away from her. Not going to disrespect her. And again, I think that there is a very confident core there that means this Brisbane team are going to be able to, have that constant presence. They will be able to score a lot of goals. I think if you look at, again, if you look at it statistically, I think they've probably been up there for chance creation and shots and everything else across the board. But again, does that actually last 22 games a season? I'm inclined to say with the nature of the way that this competition has played out the last couple of years, you can excuse me for just not getting ahead of myself. Because how many teams have done this to us now? You know what I mean? If they ended up being an equivalent of the Jets or the Mariners, where they stabilised and were a team that were just comfortably there in or around the six, that's success for Brisbane. It is. Because also you have to think about the fact that, Casper Taffer and Zach Anderson, they've gone on record as not really caring that much about the women's team, I don't think Brisbane is sitting here, creating this success. I think it's just a byproduct of Alex Smith being an incredibly smart coach and a midfield core there that, again, are just, they're really gung-ho. Like, they've built a confidence and a culture that's can be a winning one. But sustainability is the question that I come to time and time again with a team like this.
In terms of big chances created, they've created six this year and ended up scoring 10 goals. So, decent ratio there. Second highest big chances created after Newcastle Jets, who have actually created 11 and only scored six goals from it. So, almost double there, and Brisbane's still second out of the whole league, which is a bit crazy to think about at this part of the season. But then again, that depends how well Footmob actually collects stats for the A-League Women's, which has been a bit dubious in the past. So, if that is a little bit off, I do apologize. I'm going to stay with you for a second, Matt, because you did mention Alex Smith. Now, he came into the role last season, didn't look crash hot. A lot of people actually started questioning him pretty early if he was up to the task. But the way he's been able to reinvent this side and reinvent himself, I guess, his own reputation, this real, I guess, it's funny because you talk about this side being a real attacking force. They're up there with the most goals they've scored in the competition. They've actually got the best defensive record, three clean sheets. Haven't conceded since round one, only conceded three goals. So they've got a good setup at the back as well. But Alex Smith, just him as a coach, what does it mean for him as well? I know you weren't there on the podcast that we recorded with Riley Dobson, but I remember she actually mentioned his name as a possible person to come into Newcastle Jets. And one of the things that she actually mentioned was the fact that this is someone that does have ties to different levels around Australian football in all parts of Australia. And someone who also has some connections overseas that can bring in some really quality visa players. So we might be seeing a mix of that connection and maybe that tactical nuance that he showed as an assistant at Melbourne City actually come to the forefront. And it may have been taking a little time, but Riley Dobson may actually feel vindicated.
I think with Alex Smith, I think what makes him, where his football IQ is really brought out is in the fact that he has a lot of experience working within the depth of Australian football. And if you're talking about, the kind of individual that's going to have that kind of, opening moment of creating a team that doesn't really look like a lot on paper and yet has the ability to really drag that out and make it something that makes Brisbane a pretty fearful team, you end up getting a winning kind of combination there, because he's not someone that you really have to look at for a long time to understand that he's very good with his methodology, and he's very good at just understanding the players, understanding what they're going through, understanding the level required to jump from, say, the NPL to the A-League. And yeah, when I kind of wrap my head around the kind of astute nature in which they would have recruited him, just knowing that part of his background. It's a very, very, very huge compliment towards trying to actually build a winning team. I don't know. Again, Brisbane don't really strike me as though they've looked at this in the short term as well either. I think that they've just seen his resume on paper and gone, yeah, this is something that can work. So if he does. But I mean, look, if you know where this is going, if he actually does end up doing so well, he won't be managing Brisbane Roar for much longer. He'll be poached. Like that's just how that's how the story goes. And I'll tell you what, Annabelle, if Juric ends up getting the sack, I mean, we know what's happening there. So. Yeah.
Sorry, Annabelle, I don't think you're living that one down.
I'm never living that one down, but that's okay. I will accept that. I like Alex Smith as well because I think, like you said, you look at the individual players and yes, they've all got some talent, but he's really transformed them into a team that we didn't expect to be as good as they are, especially defensively. Like I think they are doing really well. Your defensive unit and your defensive structure comes so much down to a coach because you have to be so together. Like you can't rely on one person to have a little bit of flair in a defense. Like it just doesn't work like that. So his impact on this team cannot be understated.
And speaking of that back line, actually, we'll move into a new segment that I am going to start with this. We're going to do our own FPF front page dub rolling team of the season. How this will work, I'm going to basically start it off today. I'll name my team of the season so far. Next time we record, one of my co-hosts will come in. They'll make whatever changes they see fit, and we'll keep that going each episode until the season does ultimately come to a close. So to start it off, and the reason why I've followed it on from that Brisbane Roar segment is because they do feature heavily at the back. But to kick it off, goalkeeper Sally James of Canberra United. At left back, Chelsea Blissett, Brisbane Roar. Yeah, that was left back, sorry. Centre back, Taylor Otto of Melbourne City. The other centre back, Leah Varley of Brisbane Roar. Right back, Melbourne City's Alexia Apostolakis. In midfield, Isabel Gomez, Central Coast Mariners, Tamika Yallop, Brisbane Roar. And Chloe Legazzo, Western United. And up front, Alicia Woods of Brisbane Roar, Rana Polisina of Melbourne City, and right up top, Emily Gilnick of Melbourne Victory. Feel free, either of you, to tell me how wrong I am.
I'm comparing your 11 to A-League's Hub, who decided to not make it the Brisbane and Melbourne City combined 11. And I think there's probably Claudio Chicco from Newcastle Jets is a bit of a shout. Really, you didn't say Hayashi in the midfield, did
No, I didn't. That was a tough one.
you?
That's an honorable
That
mention
is
for me,
probably one of
though.
the Brisbane players I would include, to be fair. They had Mackenzie Hawksby, which in this current climate I actually really struggle to see, but fair
Yeah, I
enough.
can't back that.
And Izzy Dalton with Perth again. I just think that all right, there's a lot of Unite-round recency bias going on
If you
there.
talk about United around
But
recency, someone that probably would have been worth a shout, Sarah Donoghue. I thought her performance against Canberra was fantastic.
yeah, but there's Perth have played other games, Cody. So look. Again, I just think that I can at least understand your methodology and that, like, a lot of teams have basically all the other teams have been really poor or inconsistent outside of Roar, City, and Victory. Would Maya Markovski be worth a shout? I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, she did make a big impact, but
At the start of the
Canberra.
season, I think she might have maybe slowed down a little bit in the last couple of games.
But
I would
look,
put her ahead of
man, we're
Gilnick.
four games in the season. We're already making a comment like that. It's crazy.
Oh,
Like,
well,
there's.
we're talking a judgment for four games in the season. Of course, we're going to make that comment.
Yeah, but what I'm getting at is just how fickle this is. Like it can just
Well,
change.
it's a rolling team of the season. It's going to change in 2 weeks
No,
anyway.
but I'm actually saying this like more broadly in respect to the league table, the teams, how they play, what we're going to think of them, and in terms of a rolling 11. I mean, if we're going to apply it from round four kind of
To be
backwards.
fair, Matt, if we went with everything with this mentality, we wouldn't be recording a fucking podcast until the back end of the season, would we?
No, we wouldn't. I'd probably just include Maya because again, it was a pretty big impact. And Canberra, Canberra, I don't think have really actually been as low as people would have expected yet. So I'd probably include her, but other than that, like to really think of someone that's been gripping, it's difficult.
Annabelle, you got anything you want to add?
I don't mind it, especially, you've got to have a little bit of recency bias because we're not going to be in round 10 harking back to the person who was great in round two. So, you've got to be a little bit, keeping it up to date based on who played recently and keeping their past form in mind while you say that. But considering we are a, vibes-based analysis, podcast, as I've heard recently, we're not going to keep points on them each week or anything. We're just going to chill it out. I will say there's no wingers in your squad, so it'll be interesting to see. There's none that come to mind really that I want to throw in there, but it'll be interesting to see if the wingers start kind of producing a bit more.
Yeah,
Inevitably,
the
midfield
more I
is
look
sticking
at
in
it,
your
actually, it
mind.
probably is more of a diamond midfield with like Gomez at the base of
It's
it.
midfield heavy, but midfielders contribute a lot to games, so it kind of makes sense.
I mean, unless you're bringing the Markowski argument, if you look at those four,
No,
who
I'm not sure I
realistically
buy
is an
into that
obvious drop?
argument. I don't know. Like I think we're as Matt said, we're early, so a lot of people have been able to put together four decent games. It's can they string together six games and then eight games that I think we'll start to see people kind of cement their spot or earn their spot a bit more. But I don't mind your squad. I think it's a good start.
Well, that'll be in terms of who can be consistent over 6 or 8 games. That's either of your problems, not mine, which is fantastic. Like I said at the start of this, I've started it. One of the other two will take over as the season goes on, and we will keep alternating until this season does come to a close. And speaking of coming to a close, we are slowly going to wrap this episode up, but we'll just have a quick look over to the next round, which is a split round, actually. So instead of going through two full rounds of fixtures, it will just be essentially one round of fixtures. Each team plays once over a fortnight, while the Matildas do have their, I guess, double window of an international break of 4 games back to back, which will be great for Matildas fans. Not so great for A-League Women's fans, although I'm sure there's a heavy, heavy crossover in that Venn diagram. But this coming weekend, Melbourne City and Western Sydney Wanderers play Central Coast Mariners and Canberra United also face. And then it's not until Sunday, the 8th of December, that we get A-League Women's action again. Wellington Phoenix host Brisbane Roar. Western United face Sydney FC. Adelaide play Newcastle Jets and Perth play Melbourne Victory. Any games that you are looking out for or that excite you? Matt, I know you'll be at that Perth Melbourne Victory game. So Annabelle, I'll start with you.
I'm sure Matt's going to talk about it too, but I think the Perth Melbourne Victory game is somewhat exciting for me because Melbourne Victory and Perth are both teams that I would have anticipated being mid-table contenders coming into this season. And I think that they can kind of prove who's a bit better than the other, I guess. I don't know. Like, I know Perth. I see a lot of upside to them. I really like the addition of Stephen Peters and the players he's brought across. So I know we talked about this literally 2 weeks ago, but I have high hopes for them. I have high hopes for Victory because they've got a big history. And I just think that game's kind of an exciting fixture to come across.
Matt?
Only the second ever senior fixture at the Sam Kerr Centre, by the way, and obviously Glory's first. At the Sam Kerr Centre. So it'll be a big, really big occasion. I think Victory is the kind of club you want to come up against for something like that as well. So, yeah, I'm actually just really looking forward to being able to use the facilities there because they're just fucking incredible.
They're better than Maaso Park, are they?
hey?
Better than Maaso Park?
Oh, the presses aren't taking place in a storage closet anymore. So I'm a happy man. But it's funny though because I just think that there's a lot just again from that kind of narrative perspective where like Western, well, why have Western just been the most mid team? Like they've not been bad enough for us to care, but they've really not been anything like the Western of the last few years. And that team's coming up against Sydney, so like
And
what
the
a
Sydney
game!
team that
Like
was at one stage noticeably bad too.
another kind of mid off.
Only
Like I'm not being silly, but those two have been really good. They've had a bit of a fall from grace to start this season. Not saying they'll end the season that way, but at the moment, another kind of mid off that could be exciting to see who is not so mid, I guess.
no, exactly. That's exactly how you describe it. A mid-off that's actually like a really delicious game on paper, especially because of the
Yeah.
Hannah Lowry injury. And we know that Ante Juric is going to have to work on plan B, C, and D now. Like, what is Sydney going to dish up next? If Wellington can actually bounce back from some of their more impressive form, again, that Adelaide game, I think, again, their attacking intent improved a lot. Again, they're playing Brisbane, Brisbane with the flight to New Zealand, just very, very curious. I think Canberra as well. Canberra's still kind of holding their places, like, an okay team, and they're coming up against a Mariners team who, again, probably an embodiment of a consistent but still good team. I just think that across the board, like, it's a slate of games that's really exciting. Of course, ruined by the kind of the split round and the international break, but that's not to say that the upcoming Tillies window isn't really exciting as well. So, yeah, I'm obviously I'm gonna do what I do and just, watch as much football as I can and enjoy it. But some really tasty games on paper.
How else would you want to
I
live your life,
also
Matt?
think that there's a lot of players that'll get opportunities with so many A-League women's players that are called up. So I think that could be really exciting for, do teams have the depth to cover when their superstars get called up? Sticks out for me is we're heading back to New Zealand. Hopefully there's no more dogs on the field again. So,
Some people
pitch
may say otherwise,
invaders,
actually.
who knows what's going to happen? Yeah, maybe that was a welcome pitch invader. But, there's always going to be some sort of drama in the dogs. So see what happens.
No, that's fair. And look, I think the Mariners Canberra game is the one that's caught my eye as well. Two sides that have just petered their place in the top six, although still in a maybe slightly precarious position, the both of them, where one loss could change things a little bit for them in the short term, even if it is early in the season. So both sides will want to win there to cement their place in a final spot quite early and have something to build on for the rest of the season, which I think will be really, really interesting. And like I said, Annabelle, I'm keen to see how some of these sides go. With some key players out missing as well. Melbourne City will be without Leah Davidson definitely this weekend against the Wanderers. That is all for our show today. We ran a little bit over time, which I do apologize for, but if you're still listening, I do appreciate each and every one of you. Be sure to follow the Front Page Football socials. That's Front Page Football on Facebook, Front PG Football on Instagram and Twitter, as well as Threads, Blue Sky, and all that good stuff. And I can't remember what else we're on. Oh, yes, we're on TikTok as well. Front Page Football, or Front PG Football. Just search up Front Page Football and you'll find it. I don't know the usernames off the top of my head. I'll be real with you all. Matt, Annabelle, you guys have anything to add?
I'll tell you what, let's actually really celebrate this international break because it'll be the start of the road to a home Asian Cup as well. So I don't think we can take away from the importance of that.
Wasn't the start of the road the draw with Switzerland and the win against Germany?
Well,
And they
no.
weren't at
Well,
home. I
emphasis, well,
guess.
yes, but emphasis on the fact that they're playing Chinese Taipei. So it actually is like the opening of the window to the Asian Cup. And of course,
okay, that AFC link.
because women's football doesn't really have, like, between major tournaments, anything going on so much so that they have to create extra tournaments like the SheBelieves Cup.
Yes.
Like, this is actually a window where it's like, okay, this is Asian Cup preparation sort of coming into effect. So, yeah, I just think that element of it is really cool. And just looking forward to seeing the experiment and Tom Samani playing around. And I mean, just imagine if we get one of these younger players stepping up. Like, imagine if Brylee Henry just plays out of her skin against Brazil. Like, imagine that. It'd just be so exciting, right? So,
I don't think
yeah,
Brylee
really
Henry is
looking
actually in
forward
the squad for those games.
to
I think Brylee Henry doesn't come into the squad until the Chinese Taipei games. So,
Mate, I was just
Well,
using an
Leah
example. How are you
Davidson
going to
might
ruin?
score a screamer or something. Something exciting could happen.
There we go. Leah Davidson
There
scream, hopefully.
we go.
Oh.
If that happens, I called it.
Funnily enough, look, for the record, we're recording Wednesday night, 27th of November. There's a fair chance this podcast is actually going to go up after that first game against Brazil. So if Leah Davidson's already done that, Annabelle, you're still an
I
oracle.
caught
There we go. I think we'll leave it there. I've been Cody OG. I've been joined by Matt Olson and Annabelle Banfield tonight. Hopefully you've all enjoyed, and we will see you in a fortnight.